If you have your Bible, we're going to be in the book of Exodus, chapter 18, this week. Exodus 18 is one of my favorite chapters in the book of Exodus, and the reason why is there is such great practical advice here, okay? There's a lot of practical advice here, particularly for you that have a leadership position of any sort, but I would say that can be pastors or it can be someone in the secular workplace, but also, man, I really think that the truths of this extend to every one of us as far as with our families and friends and coworkers and things like that, the things that he calls us to do. But the dangerous thing that I see that happens when people talk about Jethro's advice to Moses here is they reduce it to leadership principles. If all this is a bunch of leadership principles, then that makes it gospel-less, right? And I think we'd miss the point of the Bible, which is to transform our lives. And so while we're going to look at some really practical advice when it comes to leading, I don't want to ever separate that from the fact that even Moses is going to do this is a sign of some spiritual work that is happening in his heart. And then that spiritual humility that God calls Moses to, it then leads to obedience, which is this practical advice that we have with what Jethro tells him, so that if you were to try to divorce the two, it would not work, okay? It wouldn't work to try to divorce the humility and the prayer away from the leading, because it is through the humility and through the prayer that God chooses to use him and that God gives him this wisdom. Does that make sense? So I just want to make sure we don't ever separate those two things out as these are some kind of a leadership axiom that we should follow. Instead, we should see that first God is transforming Moses' heart, and then after God transforms his heart, then he calls him to lead differently, okay? So I hope we can see that in Exodus 18 tonight together. So we'll start in verse 1. We'll read the whole thing, and then we'll walk through and answer some things. If you'd like to fill in blank, I would encourage you to pull this out because you have a lot of them. Since I didn't preach last week, you got 2 weeks worth of blanks on 1 week. All right. So Jethro, two key people in this story, Jethro and Moses. Jethro is Moses' father-in-law, and we'll see that said over and over and over again. I think it's important that it's said that many times because they want us to know who this guy is and why that's important. We'll talk about it in a minute. So Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. Now Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, had taken Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her home, along with her two sons. The name of one was Gershom, for he said, I've been a sojourner in a foreign land. And the name of the other, Eleazar, he said, the God of my father was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. Now Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife, the wife of Moses, into the wilderness where he was encamped at the mountain of God. And when he sent word to Moses, he said to him, I, your father-in-law, Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and two sons with her. And Moses went out to meet him, his father-in-law, and he bowed down and kissed him. And they asked each other of their welfare, and then they went into the tent. And Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the hardships that had come upon them in the way, and how the Lord had delivered them. And Jethro rejoiced for all the good that the Lord had done to Israel, in that he had delivered them out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Jethro said, blessed be the Lord who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, and has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods. Because of this affair, they dealt arrogantly with the people. And Jethro's father-in-law brought a burnt, Moses' father-in-law brought a burnt offering and sacrifices to God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, before God. All right. And just stop there and say, look, this is a glad reunion, okay? This is Moses has sent Zipporah and the kids away for the Exodus, and now they've come back with Jethro, who is Moses' father-in-law, okay, and they are all here together, and the really, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this tonight because there's so much in the last verses, but the thing to see here is that it's a great reunion with this family coming back together. They've been apart for a while, but what has brought them back together is the faithfulness of God, right? So be reminding us of, in the first verse, it tells us that Jethro heard of all that God had done for Moses, and then down in verse 8, I think really key, verses 8 and 9 in this, that Moses told his father-in-law what the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the hardships that had come upon them in the way. And that line right there, I think it's important to point out that Moses doesn't gloss over this, okay? Moses doesn't go, it was good, you know, we were in Egypt, now we're not, you know. There's been some hard times, man. This isn't always been easy. This isn't the story of the Egyptians, of the Israelites coming out of Egypt is a difficult one. And he doesn't spare Jethro those details, but he says, even in that, even in the hardships that had come our way, God has delivered us. God has provided for us. And it causes Jethro to rejoice for all the good that God had done. So what they're celebrating here is the faithfulness of God as they come together, they're reunited as a family, love one another, come back together, and they celebrate the faithfulness of God in that, okay? And that's a beautiful, beautiful picture as they come back together. Verse 13, the next day, Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. Just imagine that scene, by the way, okay? The people are coming to Moses, and he's there judging the people, and judging, I don't know what comes to your mind when you think that, but he's helping them with disputes, he's answering the questions they have about the Lord, all this. He tells us what he's doing when he's judging the people. Moses, he's doing this. Moses' father-in-law saw what he was doing, and he said, what is this that you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone, and all the people stand around you from morning till evening? And so Moses, very, I imagine, you know, happy, says this, his father-in-law, is because the people come to me to inquire of God, okay? So this is Moses is doing all that he knows to do in this moment, okay? The people are coming to him, asking him about things about God, and then Moses is just trying to be faithful to answer those things. When they have a dispute, they come to me, and I decide between one person or the other, and I make known to them the statutes of God and of his laws, okay? They're coming to me, I'm answering their questions, telling them about God's word, helping them figure out the problems that they have. It's what I'm doing. And so Moses' father-in-law said to him, what you are doing is not good, okay? It wasn't that it wasn't good because he was telling them the things of God. How Moses was doing this was not good, right? It's how he was going about this was not good. He tells him, you and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for this thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. Now obey my voice, I will give you advice, and God be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God, and you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make known, make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place those men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens, and let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but every small matter they shall decide themselves. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will direct you. You will be able to endure, and the people will go home to their place in peace. So Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said. Moses chose able men out of Israel and made them heads over the people, chiefs of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and of tens. And they judged the people at all times. Any hard case they brought to Moses, but the smaller matters they decided for themselves. Then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went away into his own country. All right, so this is the advice that God gives to Moses through his father-in-law. And again, Moses is kind of trying to get the picture there. He's before the people. He's leading the people, judging the people, shepherding the people, teaching the people, all these things. And his father-in-law comes in and says, what you're doing isn't good. Okay, this isn't the best way to do that. And what I want you to notice, this is where you'll start filling in blanks, is I want you to see the humility of Moses in that. Okay? Like, imagine the humility of Moses in that moment. He has the ability to hear loving criticism and loving correction from his father-in-law of all persons, okay? His father-in-law comes and tells him, what you're doing isn't good, and Moses listens to it. Now, I have a great father-in-law, okay? I'm not here to bash fathers-in-law, but I have a great father-in-law. I have a great mother-in-law, too. If you don't, I'm sorry. I should have thought about that. But I have a great one, all right? They're awesome. But I also... I'm just be transparent with you. I bristle pretty easily at people questioning me, okay? I don't know if you're like that. I don't know if that makes me a bad person or just type A or whatever, but I can just imagine, just think about the setting here and the fact that Moses deals with this, okay? And he does it with humility. He's reunited with his father-in-law, and on a Friday, let's imagine, okay? And on Saturday, his father-in-law starts telling him how to run the country of Israel, all right? He's just been reunited with him, right? Brought the wife and the kids back from a long stay in Midian, and they come here, and he sees what Moses is doing, and the first thing he tells him is, what you're doing is not good, right? And you can imagine the immediate response Moses might have wanted to have was, oh, what do you mean, leading the people of Israel here? Jethro, right? I mean, like, I'm sorry, where were you when I led the people out of Egypt in slavery to freedom, right? Where were you when I walked them through the Red Sea on dry ground and God gave us bread out of heaven and water from a rock and quail came down? Now, God did all that, but Moses was the point guy in every bit of it, right? I mean, he's the point guy in all of it. And so his father-in-law tells him the next day, he says, like he didn't even get through the weekend with it. The next day, his father-in-law sees what's happening and says, what you're doing is not good. And Moses has the humility to hear that. I think it is an amazing characteristic of Moses in this moment that he has grown as a man. He has grown with his walk in the Lord. And quite frankly, he's grown as a leader to be able to even hear this. To be able to hear this thing. And look, the reason, I think one of the things we sometimes miss, and I missed it in one of the sermons earlier today, that the reason God is doing this in Moses, it's a grace that God is showing Moses some areas of growth in his own life because God's not done with him. Them getting out of Egypt wasn't the point, right? This is part of the story. The rest of the story is they're going to be in the wilderness and they're going to go into the promised land that God has provided for them so that there they can become a great nation and be a blessing to all the peoples of the earth. So there, Moses is in the middle of this sanctification as a man. And so it's just the next step in that. It's the next part of the process that God is turning Moses into this man that he wants to use in great ways. And so he sends his father-in-law of all people to proclaim wisdom to him, to say, hey, quit doing it this way. There's a better way to do this. And Moses has the ears to hear that. And I think that is remarkable about Moses, is that he has the ears to hear and the humility of heart to listen to correction from his father-in-law of all people, all right? And I think there's a really great point of application for us there, and that's this next thought. I just ask myself this question when I read that. Can you handle correction? Are you someone that can handle correction? Am I someone that can handle correction? Am I someone that, have I positioned myself in such a way that no one can or will speak truth to you? That's a really good question to continue to ask yourself. Have you positioned yourself so that people can tell you the truth, even if it hurts, even if it's difficult? And not only can they, but will they? Like, how do you respond to that? How do you respond to somebody lovingly criticizing? I'm not talking about some random person on Twitter. I'm not people in your life that love you and care for you. Have you surrounded yourself with people that do love you and care for you like that? And have you given them the authority to love you and care for you like that? Not only you, but the good of those around you. This isn't just for the good of Moses. Let's not make this Moses-centered, okay? It is for the good of Moses, but ultimately, it's not just for the good of Moses. It's for the good of everybody that Moses accepts and receives this criticism and this correction. And so how have you positioned yourself? Have you positioned yourself so that you can hear those things? I can tell you, as I'm at the ripe old age of 37 now, okay? And I would say, over the last 5 years, this has grown exponentially in me, not to say that I'm good at it yet, okay? But I'm way better at it than I was when I was, you know, 23, 24, 25, 33, okay? When I knew everything. I don't know if you know, when you're 22, 23, you already know everything. You don't need to learn anything else because you all know all things. I didn't listen to people really well, okay? Did not listen well to people. Would not listen to criticism. Would not listen to wisdom. I thought I already knew everything. I tell you, I think I missed walking with some really wise people that were in my life at that time. I missed learning even more from them than what I learned, okay? And I thank God today that I have men in my life, several of them are in this room right now, that have the authority and they have the love for me that when I say something that maybe needs to be tweaked or corrected, they love me enough to go, hey, I don't know that I would have said it like that. I'm going to call one of them out because he's sitting in here. But Brian Winters, he's sitting right down here. There was a sermon a while back, and I said something that I gave an opinion in a sermon. And it was a minute thing. It wasn't a big deal, okay? It wasn't like Jesus is the only way or anything. But I gave an opinion on something that I shouldn't have said that. Even though it was my opinion, it wasn't really supported very well in the text. And Brian said, hey, I don't think I would say that in the 4:30 service. And I was like, come at me with that. And that was my first thing. I was like, I bristled a little bit. I don't know if you remember this or not. But then I came back and I was like, hey, you know what? You were right. You're right. And I didn't need to do that. And it was simple. It was little. But I thank God for men in my life that love me enough, that love you enough to say, hey, be careful with that. You know, you need people in your life that can do that for you. And you've got to position yourself to where you can hear it, that you can be questioned, that you can humble yourself enough to listen to godly people around you to help grow you and help turn you into the men and women of God that God has for us to be. John Acuff said this, and I think about this a lot. He said, people who can't be questioned often end up doing questionable things. It's just a dangerous thing when we put ourselves in a place where we don't allow people to ask questions of us, that we don't lovingly and humbly accept criticism and critique from people, correction even from people around us that love us and that care for us. And that's where Moses was when Jethro does this for him. So Jethro tells him these four things. I want to make sure you see them. 17 and 8. Let's go back and read verse 17 and 18. He says, Moses' father-in-law said to him, what you're doing is not good. You and the people will certainly wear yourselves out, for this thing is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. There's four things he says. He says, what you're doing is not good, number one. Number two, this burden is too heavy for you. Number three, you and your people, because this burden is too heavy for you, you and your people will wear yourselves out. And the fourth thing is, he says, you cannot do this by yourself. No man is an island. You can't do this on your own, Moses, okay? You need to allow the people of God to come around you and help you do this. Even though what Moses was doing was good, right? The work that Moses was accomplishing in judging the people and leading the people and teaching the people, it was a good work, but the way he was trying to accomplish it was not good. It wasn't sustainable. It was too big of a burden for one person to do by themselves. He says, you're going to wear yourself out. You're going to don't go it alone in this. Don't think that you're the only one that has all the answers. You need to do this a different way. So he's going to give him this advice. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, 7 points in four minutes here. He gives him some advice on how to lead. And I would tell you, this is, in my opinion, some of the best leadership advice that you will ever hear, okay? But don't miss that it comes from a humble heart. This isn't something you put on top of a proud heart. A heart that's full of pride is not going to be able to do these things well, okay? It's only the one that is submitting himself to the Lord, that's bowing his heart, bowing his will, bowing himself to the Lord that's going to be able to even do these things in a way that pleases God and is obedient to him. So verse 19, we'll read a verse, we'll answer the question, we'll read the verse, we'll answer it, fill in the blank, all right? Verse 19, he says, obey my voice, I give this advice to you, and God will be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God. Represent the people before God and bring their cases to God. Jethro's first piece of advice to Moses is to pray for the people, okay? So that's the first blank that I want you to get. Pray, whoever God is calling you to lead, God gives you influence with in your life, the first thing we do is pray for them. We must be people that pray for our people. And look, if you read this advice to Moses as advice to pastors, you would be correct. But if you read this only as advice to pastors, you'll miss it. Okay, this is for every one of us. Pray for the people that God has given you influence over, influence with. Pray for your spouse. Pray for your children. Pray for your coworkers. Pray for your sorority sisters and fraternity brothers. Pray for the people that God has given you, people in your community group. Pray for them. He says, come, bring their requests to God. Bring their situations before the Lord. Verse 20 says, And you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make known to them the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Second two things I want you to get is this. He says to pray for the people. Number two, he says teach them what to do. Number three, show them what to do. Okay? So we got pray for God's people, teach them what to do. So to teach people what to do, you have to know what to do, right? So there's this idea here, even preparing yourself and study of God's word, knowing God's ways and knowing God's will. Before I can teach someone what to do, I got to know what to do myself because I've studied the word of God. And the next one is show them what to do. This isn't a do as I say, not as I do. This is a follow me as I follow Christ, okay? Like here's what you should do, and let me show you what that looks like. So we're praying for God's people, teach them what to do, show them what to do. Verse 21 and 22, we'll read the rest of this. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who trust are trustworthy, who aren't going to take money for something, hate a bribe. Place such men as people as chiefs over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Okay. And then he says, let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to thee, but the small matters they can decide for themselves. So these next things. So pray for the people, teach them, show them, organize them into manageable teams, okay? Meaning that you need to not, you know, you gotta get people broken down into manageable groups. It's one of the reasons around here. This is a free plug. We want you in a community group, okay? So you can be known, and so you can be shepherded and cared for, so that people can know you and you can know them, so that when your marriage is struggling, somebody knows you well enough to know that it's struggling, so that people can look you in the eyeballs and see if something's wrong. You got people like that in your life that they can just look at you and say, what's wrong? They can hear the tone in your voice and say, hey, what's going on? You need that, okay? You got to have manageable, but you can't do that for 1,200 people, right? I mean, we gotta organize ourselves in such a way that we can care for one another like that. And he says, choose qualified people to lead these groups, okay? This really could be a lesson on community groups, but it's not. It is when we do community group leader training. This is where we go with people. But that you need to have qualified people leading these groups of people. We're not just sticking you out. You don't just sign up to lead a community group at Capstone Church, all right? We want qualified people, people that know these things, people that, he says, here, he tells them, hey, look for people that walk with the Lord, people that hate a bribe, right? These are the kind of things that he's looking for, people that meet a certain qualification is what Moses tells them to do. And then after, he says, organize them into manageable groups, find qualified people to lead them, and then the next one, I think is one of the things that we don't do really well in churches in general is this. He says to give those leaders the authority that they need to make the decisions that they need to make, right? We need to give people authority to do what God's called them to do and what God's gifted them to do. This is delegation 101, right? Don't micromanage people. He says you pray for the people, you teach them, you show them, you organize them, you find qualified men to lead them, and then let those men do what God's gifted them and called them to do. Don't micromanage people. Don't make everything come back to you, Moses, okay? Don't make everything about Moses. Give this away. Give the authority away. Give the decision-making away because God is giving these men and wisdom as well. So don't feel like everything's got to come back to you. And then it says, after you do all this, then you can manage by exception and not by rule. Because the matters that they can handle, they'll handle. The matters they can't handle, certainly they'll bring them to you, Moses. And all these things, we see this in Moses. Prayer, teaching, modeling, managing, discerning, delegating. These are the characteristics of a godly leader. You want to know what a godly leader should look like? This is a good place to start right here, okay? Really good place to start right here. He's a man of prayer. He teaches, knows the word, teaches the word, models that in his own life, knows how to manage people, shepherd people. He is discerning. He knows the truth against the lie. And he delegates the things of God to other people. He empowers other people. These are good things for every one of us to do. Again, I mean, this is a good thing for all of us, for the Lord to grow all these things in all of us. And the fruit of this, Jethro tells Moses in verse 22 and 23. He says, It says, let the people judge them all times. They'll win the great matters to you. Small matters will decide among themselves. So it will be easier for you. Okay, see these. It'll be easier for you. They will bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will be with you, or God will direct you. You'll be able to endure, and the people will go away to their place of peace. Okay, so these are the things that he tells him will happen if you do this. Jethro tells Moses, this is what's going to happen if you do this. Number one, it'll be easier for you. We all want that, right? It'll be easier. You're making it harder than it has to be. You ever have people in your life that do that? They complicate things for no apparent reason? You know anybody like that? Like, why are you making it so, this isn't hard, this is easy. Quit making things so hard. Number two, others will bear the burdens with you. We'll co-labor in this. Number three, if you do it, you'll be obedient to God, which probably should be number one. Number four, you'll be able to endure. Able to endure. I tell you again, as a guy in his mid to late 30s, endurance is not something I had thought about very much before the last year or two, okay? Just 100 miles an hour, you know. But now, it's something I think about, to be honest with you. I mean, I've told you about this guy, Herb Thomas. He's over at Circlewood Baptist. It's probably a half mile from here, the way the bird flies. Guy's been there since 79, okay? Same church since 1979, before I was born, 1980. And I remember thinking when I worked there with him, I worked there for 6 years with him, I remember thinking, this dude's been here forever. And you know what I think now? I think, wow, this guy's been here forever. You know? And I remember watching him baptizing children of people that he had married, whom he had baptized them when they were children. And now he's dedicating, you know, he's like dedicating second, third generation kids now. I'm like, man, you know what allows a man to experience the blessing of that? Endurance. Endurance allows a man to do that. And I go, man, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And it's beautiful, I can tell you why it's beautiful in Herb Thomas's life, because he's done this, okay? He's not just endured, he's prayed for the people, he's taught the people, he's showed the people, he's organized the people, he's put godly men in charge of people, he's given them authority, and what God has done, he has made the burden bear easy, he's been obedient, he's been able to endure, and the people, lastly, are satisfied, okay? In Egypt and in Circlewood, all right? And hopefully we grow in that here at Capstone, all right? He says, man, the people are going to be satisfied. They're going to go home in peace. You're going to accomplish what it is that God has for you to accomplish in that. And so you need to do these things. If you pray, teach, show, organize, choose qualified leaders, give them authority, if you'll be a godly leader, Moses, then this thing's going to go easier. You're going to be able to handle this. You're not going to burn out. You're going to be able to bear one of those burdens. You're going to be obedient to God. You're going to be able to make it through the long haul. And the people are going to be satisfied. Again, getting to the wilderness at the base of Mount Sinai, that wasn't the goal, okay? They're going somewhere else. Getting out of Egypt wasn't the goal. God had another place for them to go. And so God is continuing to grow Moses into the man of God that he wants him to be. And I would tell you, every bit of that starts with Moses being humble enough to hear godly wisdom. So what about you? Have you grown to the point spiritually? Have you grown all you can grow? I would tell you, until we are able to humble ourselves and hear godly correction and critique, the answer to that question might be yeah. And God forbid that we peak at, I don't want to peak at 37, you know? Like, I don't want to, when I'm 70, I don't want to look back and be like, that was a good time, 37, right? Like, I don't want to peak at 37. I want to peak like the day I die, right? But the only way you're able to do that is maintaining a humble, teachable spirit, that you're willing to bow your knee to a God whose ways are better than your ways, and to listen to godly counsel of wise people that have walked before you, and then be obedient to the counsel that God gives you through that. Last point is this. These are not just leadership principles, and I hope I leave you with this. This is an example of how humility before God leads to obedience to God for the glory of God and the good of God's people. Right? This is an example of how humility leads to obedience, and disobedience leads to the glory of God, and it is better for the people of God here. So really, again, these are wonderful pieces of advice. Wonderful, okay? This is leadership 101. But it starts with a humble spirit that's willing to hear. A humble spirit that is willing to bow their knee before the Lord and listen to godly advice of the men and women that surround them. And so, what about you? And I've preached this mug 3 times today, all right? And like literally, I'm like, gee whiz, I got a long way to go, man. Lord, help me, right? I mean, that's help me. Help me listen. Help me humble myself. You know, think about humility. Think about C.S. Lewis, who said, I think his definition of humility is great. He said, humility doesn't mean that you think less of yourself. It means you think of yourself less. That you're not just concerned about yourself, but you're concerned about others around you. And man, I pray that we can, for the sake of God growing us into the men and women of God that he has for us to be, so that we can be more obedient for his glory and the good of others, I pray that we would heed this advice and learn from this lesson that we've been given here with Moses and Jethro. Would you join me as we pray together? Father, I do thank you tonight for your word. Thank you that you're still working on us. And I do pray, God, that you would have your way in us. God, as we sing this song here of response, to have your way, Lord, having your way in us is probably going to mean us humbling ourselves and being quick to listen and slow to speak. It's probably going to mean hearing some hard things. But God, help us see those things as a grace. Help us see that as you growing us into the more into the image of your Son, and into the men and women of God you've called us to be. And God, thank you for people around us that can help us with that. So Lord, have your way in us tonight as we respond to your word. In Jesus' name.